seeing that in the heat of a fight there would be no cooking knives or cleavers flying around inside the armored cabin. And the trader? Normally, he would be at the helm, here and everywhere. A gruff question, perhaps, and a firm hand on a shoulder. His eyes flicking all about, giving a word of praise or a word of criticism. But now he was lying on his bunk, asleep from the drugs Christie had given him. It was the first time in all the years that Ryan had known him that the trader had agreed to take any medication, which said a lot about his condition. The outranging guards had fallen back from their perimeter and had been joined by a man and woman from the war wag. Each of them stood watch at a corner of the huge combat vehicle, scanning the blank walls of the forest all around them. Ryan found Fishmouth Charlie changed from the black uniform into a pale fawn coverall, a brown denim hat pulled down low over her thick curling hair. In the first pale hint of dawn's light, he could make out the tiny pouting mouth and the goggling eyes that had given the woman her name.
Ready, Charlie?
Sure am. Regular little army the traitor's gotten himself. Didn't find him too friendly at first, but they kind of accept us.
How's Kurt?
Not good. Figures everyone's out to kill him. He knows you're heading into the darks, and he keeps mumbling about the fogs there. The way he talks about them, I'm a lot leery myself.
Hellblast! Blood and splattered brains blinded Ryan for a moment. Sharp fragments of bone from Charlie's shattered skull stung the side of his face. He half-turned, ducking as he did so. The shot had come from a couple of hundred paces away, among the screen of trees. It had fluked a hit on poor old Charlie at his side. Probably one of the countless M16s he'd seen around Moxon, hefted by the Sekhmen. More lead ricocheted off the side of the war wagon, leaving a splash of silvery metal to the right of the nearest door. Ryan realized what a great target the golden rectangle was.
Lights!
Someone inside, no doubt JB, was quick, and the lights went out even as he shouted the warning. The firing became heavier, all concentrated on Ryan's side. In the false dawn, he saw the muzzle flashes, and he snapped off a burst from the Lappa, not waiting to see if they had any effect. Charlie's corpse was still at his feet, twitching, arms and legs flailing, and the residual movements of death mimicking life. The bullet had hit her through the right side of the cheek, angling upward, dislodging one of her bulbous eyes, exiting near the top of her skull, and flipping the cap off in a welter of blood. Ryan ducked low, wincing as a shot from the darkness hacked up a burst of mud and water barely inches from his left foot. Already there was the deafening racket of death from the war wag as everyone poured lead into the forest, giving covering fire for Ryan and the four guards to scramble back inside.
Come on, move, move!
Three made it. The fourth, a skinny, balding man called Jed, was hit in the back of the right leg as he reached the doorway. His fall blocked the door.
Nuke shit!
Ryan dove sideways into the mud, sliding on his stomach into the comforting shadow of the war wag. Jed was down and screaming, thrashing in his pain, rolling away from helping hands in the doorway. A second round smashed into his chest, and he hurled away his rifle as he coughed out a spray of arterial blood.
Ryan!
The voice came from his left, on the blind side of the vehicle. It was Samantha the Panther, crouched by the front wheels, beckoning to him. He waved a hand, getting a flashing grin in return. Jed was down and done, struggling to get to his hands and knees, blood trickling steadily from his open mouth. Ryan saw someone appear near the edge of the trees, much closer to the war wag, and throw a metallic ball toward them.
Grenade!
Ryan buried his face in his arms and cushioned himself against the shock. But the slope of the land took most of the force of the blast. The man who'd thrown it, visible in the black security uniform, made the mistake of hesitating to watch the success of the small bomb. Ryan took his chance to scuttle under the combat wagon, grabbing Sam's lean, muscular arm, hoisting himself into the comforting security port, kicking the door shut behind him. Ryan could not hide his surprise at seeing the traitor up and running the war wag from his accustomed place. But this was no time to make polite inquiries about his leader's health. Maybe later. Traitor glanced over his shoulder at Ryan.
You got that a little fine, friend.
I just made out Strasser.
Waste him!
I can't get a clear shot. There's about 20 of them here at starboard.
More on this side, too!
Moving out.
Moving out.
Chess engaged the gears, bringing the throbbing motor to full-powered roaring life. Ryan hung onto a bracket as they lurched away from the ambush. His eye caught Christie farther forward, managing a thin smile as she winked at him, realizing, in the heat of the combat, how glad he had been to have her with him, safe and unharmed. Looking up, he saw a smile spread across Hovak's face as she manned the mortar position.
Got an ace down the line at six of them setting up a launcher.
Do it.
Ryan turned to the slit at his shoulder and watched. For a second or so, everyone was silent, waiting.
the crosshairs!
Good shot. Cease fire, all!
Ryan picked his way to the stern of the Warwag, moving Rint out of the rear observation port. Setting his eye into the soft rubber socket of the backward-facing periscope, he used the self-centering gyro system to focus on what was happening back at their camp. The Sekhmen were coming out of the forest. Seeing their prey escaping, their ambush failed. The Warwag rolled northwest, then westward onto the crumbled remains of a two-lane blacktop. Ryan adjusted the focusing screw, turning the milled edge until the faces of their attackers swam into sharp detail. He saw the usual brutish, vulpine expressions that he knew from baronies and communes all over the Deathlands. Small men with a taste for cruelty. He ranged along the line, stopping at one of the Sekhmen, who pushed through to the front.
Stresser.
The high-definition directional mics at the back of the Warwag were out of action, but he did not need them to know what Strasser was shouting after them. The whole set of the man's body told it all. The gaunt body, taller than any of his men, agitated with anger. As Ryan watched him, Strasser pulled off the visored cap and threw it in the mud, kicking it with his boots. Sweat glistened on the bald skull, trickling over the thin cheeks into the ghost of a mustache. Ryan grinned with wolfish satisfaction as he saw there was still blood clotted around the police chief's mouth where the thrown pistol had struck him. Strasser was actually shaking his fist at them. Far behind him, in the fast, brightening dawn, Ryan could make out a monstrous column of greasy smoke rising from the tomb of Jordan Teague, the ruined tomb of Moxon. As they drove steadily toward a kind of safety, the trader took to his bunk once more, the rush from the action leaving him drained and sallow. Ryan organized the crew into their usual rotas, as far as was possible with their shrunken force. Only then did he find a quiet spot and sit down to relax. After a while, Hunniker came to join him. The woman seemed oddly ill at ease, rubbing her cropped green hair, adjusting the slim-bladed knife on her hip.
I have a word, Ryan.
Yeah? What?
Well,
Come on, hon. What's got you? Still feeling for Ange?
No. Well, some, I guess. She was a sweet kid, and I figured we might... Oh, burn all that, Ryan. It's over and out.
What?
When we was back in Moxon, me and Sam and Cole and JB was talking, and we...
Hon, you want me to pull your hell-damned liver up through your neck?
No. Why would you?
I'm tired. Just say it.
We was talking about you, and we thought nobody knows what your name is. Ryan. Just Ryan. Gotta be another name. Not even JP knew it.
Is that all?
Yeah. You don't mind me asking like this.
Hell no. Why should I? It's Carter. Ryan Carter. Not a secret, hon.
Ryan Carter. That's not too special, is it? So how come you never told nobody before?
I guess because nobody ever asked me before.
They smiled at each other, a look passing between them that held a certain kind of gentleness. Warwag 1, now the only Warwag, ground deeper into the darks.
Claws and teeth. Claws and teeth.
The flight from the blazing carnage of Moxon and the horrible death of his only friend, Fishmouth Charlie, finally and irrevocably tipped the balance of Kurt's mind into madness. The Warwag's medic, Kathy, did what she could, loading him with sleepers, but it was obvious that the shrieking had taken him over. Over and over and over again, even when the drugs were shutting down the lines. Even when his eyes were closed and his pulse had eased, still the peeled lips kept moving. The charred skin of the face twitched as though worms crawled through the muscles around his mouth. Always the same, always about the fog that he'd seen long months back, on his terrible journey into the peaked wilderness.
The fog has claws and teeth.
The two-lane blacktop had given way to the broken and weed-infested concrete of a wider highway. It made for a generally better motoring for the Warwag, enabling Chess or Hunniker to drive on at a steady pace. All the doors were open, and clean air flowed through the vehicle, purging it of the stench of sweat and death. Ahead of them, the mountains grew closer and more threatening. Their tops smoked with wind-blown snow. Now and again they had to slow down because of the results of the Great Holocaust 100 years before. Many times, the solid road turned into corrugated ribbons of distorted stone from the effect of the nuking. Bridges were often down. Embankments collapsed. Once, with Chess at the helm, face taut with concentration, they maneuvered along a ledge through an earth slip, with less than a handspan on either side. On the right, a wall of glistening gray mud, speckled with fragments of dolomitic limestone. On the left, a long, long drop to a tumbling river. The trader was still spending most of the time in his bunk, his coughing fits audible to everyone in the war wag. JB and Ryan Cotter shared the leadership of the party, taking 6 hours on and six off. Apart from the trader's declining health and Kurt's raving madness, the war wag was running smoothly. Every cog turned as it should, and everyone knew his or her role. Christy was wise enough to keep out of the way, offering help when she could. The only other outsider was the stranger called Doc. Once they were safely away from Strasser and his murderous sec-men, JB and Ryan told Cole to bring the old man to them in the nav room. Cole deposited the shambling wreck of a man at the door.
Here he is.
Leave him be. And close that door, Cole.
Doc's fingers knotted nervously, like newborn rattlers. It was the first occasion that Ryan had been able to find a little time to speak to Doc, and Ryan studied him. There was something about the man, something in addition to his brain-blasted condition, that Ryan could not put a finger on. JB motioned to one of the steel and canvas chairs.
Sit down.
I am most obliged, sir. Most obliged.
You're called Doc, right? And Tegan Strasser treated you like shit.
Indeed. I fear that there is considerable truth in that terse observation, Mr...
Cotter. I'm Ryan Cotter. This here is J.B. Dix, the weapons master on the Warwag.
Doc made a courtly bow, removed the battered hat from his thinning gray hair, which hung around his shoulders like an unhealthy growth on rotting meat. His boots were cracked and worn. The shirt was faded to the palest of yellows, and his coat was torn and smeared with what looked to Ryan like gobbets of pig shit. Yet, despite all that, the old man had style.
I'm delighted to make your acquaintances, gentlemen. Forgive me that I'm not able to show my gratitude in a more positive way, but I am temporarily a little short of funds, or I would not have hesitated to seek... I fear... The words have somewhat trickled away from me down the culverts of time.
Ryan stood suddenly, intending to pass Doc a mug of water. But the old man recoiled, hands flying to cover his face against the blow.
No, don't!
Doc, I'm not going to hurt you. Chill that kind of idea. This isn't Moxon.
Ah, Moxon. Sweet pearl set in... Do you know what Mr. Teague and Mr. Strasser made me do if I displeased them in aught?
We don't want to talk about that. We're more interested in the darks.
I was taken to the pig pens. I who was once... But I disremember that. Sorry. I was stripped and made to attempt carnal union with our porcine brethren. Perhaps sisterhood is a better turn of phrase. Only when I had succeeded in such a union was I allowed free once more. This happened many, oh, so many times.
JB took off his thin-rimmed glasses and busied himself polishing them. If the old man hadn't been so damned tragic, Ryan would have smiled at the unusual sight of J.B. Dix at a loss for words.
How did Teague get his blubbering claws into you?
I believe... I fear me that such things are lost in the far-off mists.
The door opened, and Christy appeared, the brightness of her hair flooding the nav room with crimson light.
Kathy says Kurt's going, Ryan.
I'll be along. Thanks.
Doc bowed at the appearance of the woman, but Christy did not notice and went on her way, leaving the door ajar.
Should I absent myself, Mr. Cawdor? Cawdor, I have the feeling I have heard the name before, but I confess that I think that about many things. The price of my age.
You can go, Doc. Talk to you again, huh?
It would be my pleasure, sir. Mr. Dix, my best wishes. I'll close the door on my way out. Oh, yes. Did I understand you to say something about our ultimate destination? Our Ultima Thule, perhaps, is what you call the Darks?
It is.
Known, I believe, as one of the great parks of the nation. One nation in... how did it go? Glacier, that's it. That was the name of the Darks. Great hills, ice-tipped. Ravines dark as graves. Water pure and clear. I think I've been to the Darks more than once. I think so.
Doc, go on.
I fear I can no longer go on, as you put it, Mr. Corder. There is nowhere to go. But in the Darks, there were many wonders. Wonders of F to G, and G to H, and on, from Alpha to Omega, they told me. But I saw only... saw what, I wonder? Ah, well.
Shaking his head, Doc walked through the door, reaching behind him and softly closing it. JB looked at Ryan.
I'd have said he was crazed as an outbrained muty. Then he ups and talks like he just did.
You think it's all muty talk?
Who knows? I know I could use a cheroot right now. One of these days I'll give these things up. I'm told they'll kill me. Seems from Doc and Kurt and Christy that there might be something secret up there. Maybe...
maybe what? Come on, JB, what?
This talk about moving. Suppose there really was a transmitter of matter. I've read about things like that in old books. They called them jumpers, I think. It was fiction, of course, not fact. But if there was... well, worth thinking on, old friend. A way of getting from Deathlands to the Western Islands in a wink of an eye. Or from the Baronies out east to beyond the Big Black Water... that, instead of weeks of danger in a war wag. Think on that.
I will. Right now, I've got to go see Kurt.
Ryan moved into the corridor. Out of one of the obsolets, Ryan stood and watched the setting sun on the left side of the war wag. The sky was dappled pink, streaked with shades of darker, menacing maroon. There was a big wind starting up outside, and all the doors had been closed, but it was still possible to hear the muted whistling of the gale. Banks of trees all around them crowded up the edges of the ruined highway, most of them with their upper branches stunted or broken by the weather. Once the doors were battened and bolted and the obsolets locked shut, the voices in the war wag became quieter, and the oppression became a tangible thing, sitting on everyone's spirits. Now, with a man dying, hardly anyone was talking. Those on duty were busy enough, but the rest either dozed or listened to tapes through the cans. Ryan eased his way along to the tiny sick bay. Generally, it was not much used. In a firefight, there were rarely any wounded. Christy was sitting on the edge of the bunk, wiping Kurt's forehead. Even in the past few hours, the man had sunk. The mouth was relaxed, the eyes open. Even the babbling had finally stopped. The eyes followed Ryan as he moved into the room.
How is he, Christy?
He's near finally fucked, Ryan.
Looks that way.
Ryan was conscious that someone had come in behind them. Out of the corner of his eye, Ryan recognized the shambling figure of Doc.
Better here than back in hell sucking moxon, Ryan.
Yeah.
Matt could choose worse company than this to die in.
Guess so. Anything you want?
Maybe a long drink and a tall blonde. No, make that two of each.
Kurt's eyes fixed to Ryan's face. Then his eyes closed, and the flurried movement of his chest ceased. Ryan glanced across at Christy, who shook her head, and reached down to pull the gray blanket up over the blackened features.
Gone beyond the river from which no man returns.
He's chilled, Doc. The rest is crap. Life is just something you lose.
Ah. I was meaning to ask you, Mr. Cawdor, if by chance any of your people had come across a possession of mine.
What possession, Doc?
Plural, I think. There are two of them.
past tense. There were two of them. Small, gray spheroids, about so big.
He held his fingers apart to indicate something roughly the size of an implode stun grenade.
Haven't seen them. What were they?
Nothing of importance, my dear sir. Nothing at all.
The war wag bumped over a particularly deep rut. Doc adjusted his ancient hat, which he insisted on wearing, despite being inside the war wag.
Upon my soul, these roads are not what they once were, back before this desolation.
How in the big fire do you know what they were like before the nukeouts?
Slip of the tongue. I have read of these great roads, that is all. That is all. That... In the docks, there was a dreadful fog. Mistake. It escaped. Heads rolled. Fog like Cerberus.
What the fuck's a Cerberus?
A frightful hound of many ravening heads that guards the very mouth of Hades. Oh, yes, Cerberus. That was the name of the project, once. Then it changed. Changed. A fog, Mr. Corder.
A fog in the darks?
A fog with claws and teeth. Such claws and teeth.
Even in that peaceful, desolate land, with not a single human being seen in 3 whole days, there was still the presence of death. They had been forced into a swinging detour around one of the few hotspots in the region, circumventing what had allegedly once been a town of 70,000 souls called Grand Falls. It had been hit by Soviet missiles for its special industrial importance and power plants, and it was still a place to avoid, its ruins toxic. Toward evening of the following day, Ryan received the message that the traitor wanted to speak to him. It was Christie who conveyed it to him. With every day that passed, the girl looked in better and better shape, all the horrors now behind her. She was wearing pale green overalls with a bandolier of ammunition for her pistol that was crossed over with a broad leather belt that carried 3 leaf-bladed throwing knives. A larger knife hung on her right hip with a counter-draw holster for the automatic on the left side of the belt. The fiery hair was bright and lustrous, tumbling nearly to her narrow waist. The top of the overall was unbuttoned, showing the shadow of her breasts. Ryan Cotter found it increasingly difficult to conceal his desire for her, asking himself whether it was desire or whether it was lust. The word love never entered his mind. He followed her through the war wag, conscious of the click of the heels of her polished high boots and the movement of her buttocks against her outfit. Doc was leaning against a wall near the trader's cabin, his eyes hooded and far away. As Ryan squeezed by him, Doc spoke quietly.
After the missiles had fallen and the 44th president was up in the 767, how did he begin his message to the states?
I don't know, Doc. How did he begin his speech?
My fellow American. You understand it, Mr. Corder? In the singular. My fellow American.
Ryan stooped to enter the trader's cramped room. He was met with a sour smell of illness. By the side of the bunk was a porcelain bowl splattered with blood and spittle. Torn rags, also stained crimson, lay on the floor. The trader had always been a man of the fiercest pride, and now all that was done as his race neared its ending. The trader's face was like a frail old man's, the skin taut as parchment over the cheekbones.
Close the door, Ryan. I figure another 2 days at the most and we'll be in the darks. I can taste the thin air. You know what to do?
I think we've covered every eventuality between you, JB, and me. It's an and.
If there's anything after, then I'll be seeing old Mars Folsom real soon, Ryan.
I know it. We all do.
Here you told your name. Ryan Cotter. Anyone recognize it?
No. The doc said he might have heard it, but he can't recall anything for more than a minute or so.
Wish I had the time to chew over past days with him. Won't happen. Look around here, Ryan. What do you see?
Spare clothes, your Armalite, handgun, knives, ammo, grenades, a couple of maps, food you haven't eaten, pack of cigars,
That all?
Sure. What else should I see?
Get me a mouthful of water. Thanks. Nothing. That's what else you should see. You listed it all, Ryan. It don't add up to much for better than 50 years of living. Nothing to add up to the pain of the mother that birthed me.
What you've done isn't here, traitor. It's out yonder, outside. You kept a lot of folks breathing that would surely have been chilled.
I chilled me some.
Sure, they needed chilling. What you've done is to bring a little light to this pile of shit. Deathlands. If it hadn't been for you, then I'd have been dead. So would JB and everyone else in this war wag. You know it, traitor.
As the war wag rumbled steadily northwest, the two old friends sat together in silence.
Ryan. Ryan and JB, come to the driving console. Something you should see.
Ryan left Trader to sleep and moved out into the corridor. As he stepped forward, he felt the war wag shudder to a halt. On every side, men and women had moved fast to their firefight positions, standing ready by the obsolets and weapon ports. JB joined him.
What is it, hon?
Look out front. Never seen nothing like it. How about you, JB?
They squeezed in either side of her, peering through the forward screen.
What is it?
JB, not one to waste words, simply shook his head. Hun pointed to the left, to the great jagged peaks of the Rockies jutting in toward them.
I saw them first on this side. One or two. Feathers. Then this spooky kind of stuff. I thought not many people had been in the darks and survived. So who put up the decorations?
They were made out of branches of trees that Ryan believed were called aspens. Poles had been hewn from the silvery green wood, with its crisscrossing black scars, then tied into shapes like the teepees that some of the double poor of Deathlands lived in. There were three of them, stretched across the crumbling relic of a road. The one nearest the edge was covered in a sprouting bunch of feathers, red and yellow and golden brown, hundreds of them. And topping it was a narrow-bladed knife of rusting iron, its haft wrapped in strips of what looked like dried leather or skin. The right-hand tripod was leaning to the front, set close against a cliff of moss-streaked stone. Tufted pink flowers decorated the poles, some of the flowers dead, drooping and falling on the damp earth. But it was the center set of branches that caught Ryan's eye. It was much the tallest, well over a tall man's height, blocking the trail. Ribbons of material were festooned all over it, tied in place with rawhide thongs. Small metal stars of brass and copper dangled from the silks and satins, and on the top, held in place with circling strands of green wire, was a human head. The eyes had gone, and half the teeth were missing. The lower jaw dangled in a macabre leer, kept by a thread of gristle.
What's that on his forehead?
Bullet hole.
Looks like a warning.
Do we stop or do we go on or what?
We go on.
War Wag 1 rolled forward again as Hun engaged the gears, driving straight for the center of the sets of aspen poles, crushing it beneath the heavy wheels. In the next hour, they came across three more sets of the weird signs. Both J.B. Dix and Ryan Cotter stayed in the main control cabin, keeping the combat vehicle in a state of full fighting readiness with everyone on alert. The trail ahead was becoming steeper, and the gauges showed a sharp temperature drop as night closed in on them.
How far?
Not sure. All we can do is put together everything we know and add in Kurt's ravings and what Christy knew. Best map we have don't show us much. But if there's this stockpile or redoubt up there, then it's close to a place called Many Glaciers, near as we can figure.
We stopping soon?
Yeah. Give it another 10, then pull on over. That looks like a meadow along that river. Trees far enough back to cut down an ambush.
What do you think about those poles?
Warning. Some muty religion trick. Maybe we're on someone's home turf. I've heard nothing about any townies moving up here.
Within a few minutes, the huge war wag had finally pulled over for the night, and the usual sentries had been posted. Supper was cooking, and around a fire, most of the men and women in the team were making and mending, cleaning armaments and repairing clothes. Unusual for the Deathlands, the water was good. Ryan walked down and sat on a large boulder, riven by the frosts, and flicked pebbles into the river. Christy joined him there, quietly sat down by him, stretching out her long legs, staring at her own reflection in the polished leather of her boots. Ryan Cotter was not a man given to endless agonizing and self-doubts. that on this beautiful evening, he felt a rare sense of melancholy. Things were changing. The majority of his friends had been chilled within the past week,